Blog Talk Radio.
It's not just Washington that is broken. It's America who is asleep at the wheel. Why do they tell us that the Constitution is outdated? Can you outdate liberty? This is Brett Rappaport, and you are listening to the Final Say Radio Show. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Final Say Radio Show with Brett and John Rappaport. Today is Tuesday, so we have our special Tuesday guest who joins us every week. I know last week he came Wednesday, but that's a special event. Anyway, James S. Robbins will be joining us actually in the first half hour of the program today. We've got so many things going on around the world, and unfortunately locally. So we'll be discussing many things from the riots in Baltimore to Hillary Clinton to what's going on in Iran, and so on and so forth. But without further ado, I'm going to bring our first guest into the discussion this morning, and I want to welcome back on Tuesday, as always, James S. Robbins. Jim, it's always a pleasure, and thank you for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. How's it going?
Well, for you and me, it's going fine, but I guess if you were in certain parts of Baltimore, you would be a little frustrated, worried, scared, befuddled, amongst many other adjectives and words we can come up with at the moment.
When people need room to destroy, you just got to give it to them, and then, you know, according to the mayor of Baltimore. But
I'm glad that's your first statement today, because I was reading her statement from today, and I noticed on social media the response from people saying, like, what do you mean? Her statements were perfectly sensible. I'm like, but did you read her first statements? Because they were the opposite of what she said. Evidently, somebody, like, shook her by her shoulders and said, what are you, nuts? And the tune spun around, right?
Yeah, they did this on Fox News last night after she got all angry and saying, I never said it. You know, about room to destroy. And then they ran the tape of her exact quote, you know, if people, you know, we gave room for the people who wanted to destroy. And, I mean, what, if she could just apologize for making this statement, or, you know, for being stupid, or for I don't know what, for having this ideological view of the world in which, you know, the motives of those who wish to vent their anger through looting and burning things down is somehow a valid expression, or I don't know what. But what she can't say is, I never said it, because she certainly did. And what I would love to see is if a reporter could go out and interview some of the rioters, find some of the looters, and say, were you inspired by the views of the mayor that those who wanted to destroy should be free to give vent, given the space, you know, given the opportunity to give vent to that? And if only we could get some of the rioters on the record saying, you know, I listened to the mayor's statement, I thought about it, I considered it, and then I burned down the CVS, and I really felt good about it because she gave me the space to do that.
It is absurd. So, Jim, let's try to... I think you have to discuss this story, breaking it down into different parts, because there are some things in this story that are certainly problematic that need to be addressed. And then on one hand, or on from one perspective, and then on the other hand, the responses that we've seen in recent years, and, you know, they're the same responses we've seen after you know, sports teams win a championship in certain cities around the country. Not in New York City, of course, because they've managed to avoid that. But in L.A., Chicago, other places, we've seen the same type of mass violence, rioting, looting, fires, and whatnot. Now, I think you have to separate these two issues. One is, if you have an issue in a police force with whether it be that some of the officers are a little overboard in how they treat the people in the precincts that they are working, whether they're mishandling people during arrests or whatever it is that they are doing, that's a separate issue. And I could understand, you know, if this fellow was picked up, Gray, and at the end of the day ends up dying from whatever had happened, and we don't know. Obviously, there's going to be an investigation, and calmer heads should prevail why that's being done. And I would trust, being that you have Democrats running the process, you know, you have the mayor, other people involved, that they would have enough in the game to ensure that there's a proper investigation and that there's not a cover-up of any sort, and so on and so forth, and the facts will come out. And then the police, who are currently on leave, paid leave, until the investigation is done, will either, you know, be exonerated or they'll be brought up on charges. I mean, that's the way I see it. But in the meantime, when people who live in these communities take to the streets and start burning up just random people's cars and homes and buildings and in their own communities, I do not understand in any way how that answers to the possibility of police brutality, and I don't understand how that could possibly benefit these people. It doesn't whatsoever. And the fact is, it's about time that we clamp down on this type of behavior to the point where it doesn't happen again. Now, I went overboard myself in social media saying that, in my opinion, if somebody was coming after my store to burn it down, I would shoot first, ask questions later. But that's me. I'm not telling the police to go shooting, but people have a right in this country to protect their families and their property. And I think that these lunatic rioters have to understand that.
Well, I agree that there's no justification for police brutality or for rioting. I don't think anyone would say that, suggests that there is. I think it's interesting how it seems to be almost a required, if not expected, thing that in these cases where there is some incident that suddenly riots break out. And some have noted that there are professional anarchist types who go from place to place and stir things up because it's in their interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the interest of what they espouse to make these things turn violent. And I know that when the city fathers of Baltimore or whoever, the politicians there say, or the police say, well, it's outside agitators, it wasn't really our folks, to be up blaming them for what was going on. I mean, I understand that that's kind of a pass-the-buck talking point. But on the other hand, there is some validity to it, because if you look on social media, you can see some of these professional groups egging people on to engage in this violent behavior and no doubt sending people there to help instigate it. We certainly saw that in Ferguson. There was a lot of that going on.
Quick question to that point, though. If you're looking at Ferguson, and Ferguson says outside agitators came, or if you're in L.A. and they say outside agitators came, well, they have to come from somewhere. So they have to come from some of these cities. So I know they're like playing this blame game, but my guess is that some of these people come from a multitude of places. But I'm sorry, I just wanted to say that because it seems like a very convenient way out of it for passing the buck, like you said.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that they say that in part just to kind of take the heat off. But to me, it's not a question of whether they're outsiders so much. It's that they're the pros at it. They're the people who are ready to riot, not because of, you know, this idea that the underclass is oppressed and waiting to blow, you know, that kind of that approach to it. But rather, these are people who have an ideological connection to chaos itself and to anarchy. Those are the people I'm talking about. Whether they happen to live in Baltimore or not, the fact is you've got little pockets of them all over the country, and they get involved in these things. Now, as I was about to say, I have yet to see a dude running around wearing a Guy Fawkes mask in this particular bit of chaos, whatever it is. I mean, that's a dead giveaway when you see some, you know, hipster wearing a Guy Fawkes mask. you know, which any honest underclass rioter wouldn't be caught dead in. I mean, that's a sure sign that you have these outside losers coming in. So once we see that, then we'll know for sure.
Now, I want to go over some, you know, just thoughts that have come from, like, the president spoke on this. He referred to the troubling police interactions with black citizens across America in what he's terming a slow-rolling crisis. But he said also, and I want to give him credit, that he said there's no excuse for rioters to engage in senseless violence. He went on to say, they aren't protesting, they aren't making a statement, they aren't stealing, Obama said. And so I give him credit for making that statement. I do have to call him out on the slow-rolling crisis, because the fact is that his party, his political base, the endless amount of money that has been spent in these communities to deal with these ongoing problems now for just decades, we've called it in the trillions because it is. But at what point do you look at the system in place in these cities and say that the leadership and the management and the people who actually live there are failing? It's not just institutional racism when you have millions of people who almost refuse at this point to do what is really in their own best interest, and that is to take advantage of public education, take advantage of all the different types of job training and other programs that are available for not just recently, but for a long time. There's opportunity. You could join. You want to get out of a bad neighborhood? You could join the military. Maybe it's not the most ideal thing, you know, finding yourself overseas fighting, some of these areas that are dangerous. But there are so many opportunities for people to get out of the cycle that they find themselves in. It's almost like there's just no more excuses anymore. And then I'll throw one more thing into that point. Who puts the drugs, the alcohol, who makes people join the gangs, who makes someone become a prostitute, who makes people do all these things that they know are so detrimental to themselves and the people around them, and especially their families?
Oh, sure. I mean, it all gets back to the question, where are the parents in all this? Now, I love that video of the mom who saw her son out there rioting and went out and started smacking him. You know? That was fantastic. That lady, she should be the mayor. You know? She should be the person running Baltimore, not the person they have. Because she thought in a very fundamental way, what the heck are you doing? And, you know, administering her mama bear punishment on her kid. For being out there and doing this, that's really what it gets down to. If you can somehow address the parenthood issue in these communities of absentee fathers or just people not caring or having too many kids too soon or not caring once you have the kids, not caring enough to raise them correctly or help them get a good education. And, you know, in education, it doesn't just fall on the teachers. The parents have to be involved. I think all of these things would go a long way towards fixing the problem, because as we've seen in other communities, immigrant communities, people who come here with nothing, with no advantages, with no background, with no inherited wealth or community support or anything, immigrant groups who come to this country, and they become greatly successful, because they have strong family bonds and they help each other out and they do things the right way. If you can promote, so in other words, the American system can work for people who are disadvantaged. If they're economically disadvantaged, that's not a problem, because if they are advantaged by the strength of their family ties and by the way that they live, then they will get ahead in this country, because that is the way the country works. If you don't have that, spending trillions of dollars on giveaways isn't going to help, because it'll just be consumed and then life goes on.
That's an excellent point. And I would add to your comment on the immigrants who come here. Many of them don't even speak English, and they maybe at best know a handful of words, and they still manage to, within a generation or two, become successful, just built into the fabric of their communities and vibrant, and their kids are fully mixed into that that melting pot, and you know, they move forward as if they were always here, and there's no reason that people who've been here for so long shouldn't be able to. Now, this is something that I heard somebody talking about. I can't remember where I heard this, so I'd love to give proper credit, but I can't. Just the idea that some of the handouts that we give in this country exceed what almost 90% or more of the people around the globe make in an entire year. In other words, we give away so much in either social welfare or charities or all the above and similar types of programs to people that would actually put them as a standard of living or as wealth in the top, you know, maybe 1, 5, 10% in the entire world. And that's just, we're giving them to them. And it's absolutely correct. I mean, if you file a tax return and you're under a certain income and you have a few kids, you get an earned income credit in the neighborhood of $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. That's free money given to you, in addition to all the other things that you're entitled to, whether it be free housing or subsidized housing or food and all different types of things. So it's like, I don't know how much more you could do outside of just basically giving people everything they want upon their request to satisfy, you know, what it is exactly that they're angry with. The bottom line is, and I think you would agree, Jim, we've been to many of these cities, and there are plenty of fine people who, you know, even if they're poor, there are plenty of good, decent people who live there who are kind of stuck, but they deal with it, and they would love to see nothing more than improvements in their communities. And, you know, I would too. The president would. I know you would. But it's got to start with these people who are so quick to take to the streets and become violent and destructive, to realize that they're the ones that need to change. And by the way, none of that has anything to do with the brutality or not of police and their conduct. It's a separate issue that has to be dealt with separately. Two completely different issues. And when you try to combine it all together, it doesn't really add up.
Well, they do combine it all together because you have a professional class of people in the race industry, the Al Sharptons of the world, who have an interest in combining all those things and making them all one issue, and then using their influence rather than to make it better, just to make it worse, because the worse it is, the more important they are and the more money they make. So until you get a change in that leadership, in which the people are going to start talking about the real problems and not about these made-up things that only empower this leadership class and keep the rest of the people down, essentially, you're not going to have any progress. So there's an area in which work needs to be done. Get a new class of African-American leaders who are willing not to immediately charge racism about absolutely everything and shut down discussions and play the blame game and play the guilt game and all these other things that make it impossible to have any kind of reasonable discussion or chance for reform, and let them work from within. I know there are folks like that out there. I'm positive there are. And if they can somehow displace the group of people who have been keeping things so bad for so long, I think that would be great.
Yeah. Amen. I want to bring up Michael Brown, who I'm reading this from an AP story. I'm just going to read this quick sentence. The rioting was the worst, a couple of sentences. The rioting was the worst violence in the U.S. since the turbulent protests that broke out over the death of Michael Brown, the unarmed black 18-year-old who was shot by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri last summer. Now, let's add some facts to that statement. Michael Brown committed a crime, tried to attack a police officer, and got shot. And you would never know that by the way they forget the facts and try to tie that piece into the story of, oh, there's these ongoing problems. And maybe there are, but let's be accurate about what happened in Ferguson. And the fact is that Michael Brown was in the wrong, and the cop after the investigation by the federal investigators who looked into it, even said there's no charges here. So as quick as Obama and Holder were to run into Ferguson and the surrounding communities and say, we'll get to the bottom of this, well, they did. And they understood exactly what the facts really were at the end of the day. So maybe the facts in this case are different, but like I said, we haven't had an investigation yet. And so I just wanted to mention that. But one thing that caught me in the story was they'd spoken to the guy either ran, was the manager, or one of the key employees at the CVS that they burnt down. And his statement was basically this, Jim. This is where we work. I mean, there aren't a lot of opportunities for us, but this is how we live. And you destroyed that in your own community. Now what are we supposed to do? So who did you hurt? You hurt the people who, you know, they're the ones in the community that do the positive things, and that's the people who really got hurt at the end of the day. And it is a tragedy. And I would love to see, you know, this change. But, you know, a question you have to ask, Jim, and I would ask you, you know, just your thoughts. But if I'm the owner of companies like CVS and whatnot, and I put major investments into these areas knowing that this seems to be the trend now, do you have to reconsider where you have these stores located? Do you possibly not make the investment in the future in some of these places? And you look to places where you know that the chances of this happening is like 0.001%, not 50%.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess insurance will pay for where that was burned down, and they can probably rebuild and go back in. I don't know how, if it would be a national phenomenon of large stores deserting inner cities because of the chance of some random riot getting them burned down. But on the other hand, the more of these things that happen, then that has to play a part in their calculations. It will certainly play a part in their insurance rates, but I can't see that going down because of things like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as you point out, it's just a self-destructive logic. Why burn down a store in your own community that hires people from your community, that offers a valuable service in providing things that you need to buy, you know, that's right nearby? Why do that? But again, you're trying to apply logic and rationality to this rioting that isn't really logical or rational. On the basic self-interest level, I guess there's a certain logic to running in and grabbing something for free that you want because you don't care if you're stealing and you might as well get it. But why burn the thing down? You know, I mean, if you're going to loot, just loot. What's with the arson? I don't get it.
I don't either. And, you know, just it's all bad. And I'm sure over the coming weeks we'll pick back up on this story. There's a couple other things that we'll get into with the minutes we have left. You know, we're reading reports about a cargo ship that they believe was intercepted by the Iranians and being transported back to one of their ports. So I don't know if you have any further details on that. First, is the story accurate? And two, what kind of an impact? Well, if we had a normal president, I know the impact, but what kind of an impact might that have on the ongoing negotiations, which I'm totally against to begin with, but you know, I think it's very clear if Iran's going to take that type of action, they are no one to trust, and certainly no one that you could sit down and negotiate with.
The Maersk Tigris, a Marshall Islands flag vessel owned by a group in Germany, going from Jeddah to Dubai, so was intercepted and taken to Bandar Abbas. So who knows why? I guess that will come out, why the Iranians felt they needed to board it, why they steered it towards their own port, supposedly for some kind of inspection, I would guess. Did they think it was smuggling something? I mean, they're going to come up with some rationale for it. But, I mean, it wasn't an American vessel, and the government says there weren't any Americans on board, which is fine. What it shows, though, is that the Iranians don't have any compunctions about using force to do this if they think they need to. We put out an aircraft carrier, a missile-carrying frigate, and seven other ships to chase off Iranian arms smugglers while all the time saying, we're not going to board you. you know, we're not going to take action. We're just sort of out here in case you do something. And then they departed. I mean, it's just interesting how at the same time that we're showing strength and weakness simultaneously, the Iranians feel they need to project this sense of power that, yes, we can board ships. We will take over and commandeer a vessel if we think we need to. We still haven't heard a statement from Iran why they did it, but I suspect it'll be something having to do with smuggling, or whether it's true or not. They could just concoct this if they wanted to, but I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, of course, I know there'll be more ongoing parts of that story as well, as all these stories are still fluid and moving. There's another interesting thing that I didn't mention to you before, but evidently Saudi Arabia on Tuesday announced the arrest of 93 suspects who had ties to the Islamic State group, who it said were planning a multi-pronged attack on the U.S. embassy, security forces, and residential compounds where the foreigners are living. And, of course, there's other details to that story, but I think that's interesting. And what I take from that actually is Saudi Arabia is definitely concerned. They're concerned with what's going on in Yemen. They're obviously and understandably concerned with the gains that Iran has made and their influence and involvement in so many of the countries surrounding them in the region. They're definitely absolutely concerned about the nuclear program. And they've been upset with this administration for years now, and they've been vocal about it, about the, you know, I guess, turbulent relationship between the House of Saud and this administration. But it's good to see that they are at least taking, you know, further steps from the steps they've already taken to combat some of these things. And if they did, in fact, have our back on this, well, thank you. Here's one time where I'll thank the Saudis.
Oh, yeah, well, why not? But bear in mind that a group like ISIS has no use for the Saudi regime either. They may be ideologically, you know, co-brothers, but the fact is they hate them. So, you know, just like Al-Qaeda did, Osama bin Laden probably agrees with 99% of what the Wahhabist ideology is in Saudi Arabia, but he still wanted to overthrow the kingdom. And I'm sure the Islamic State wants to as well, because they're the caliphate. They're the Islamic State. They want to absorb every regime in the region. So, yes, nice of Saudi Arabia to take down a plot to attack us, but, I mean, the fact is, these are the same people who would attack them, so it's not really an altruism on their part. You know,
no,
to take down,
I understand.
Planning ISIS cells. Yeah.
I understand, but in this particular case, at least they stopped it before it happened and not just helping to respond as it's happening or after the fact. So I'll take it as a win. In today's news cycle, I guess it's a win, right?
Why not?
Now, there are a few other things. I'll come back domestically, and just because Baltimore's in the riots and things, and the fact that they had to cancel a few baseball games, and you know, that people are worried about leaving their homes in some cases, you know, let's not let that take center stage, because you still have Hillary Clinton out there. You still have her having, one, she lived in the White House. Her husband was president for two terms. She's Secretary of State. She was involved in so many other roles, flying around the globe, dealing with foreign representatives and whatnot. But let's get back to her use of emails, the constant lies, the money going into her foundation. There are a lot of problems here. And I guess, Jim, the question I'd have to you is, who should be investigating her? Will it happen? And what kind of pressure should we be putting on to ensure that it does?
Oh, I don't know if we can address all that in the 30 seconds we have left. But, I think that I don't know who should be investigating her. Probably the Justice Department, for a start. Congress can do its thing. I know that if she manages to be elected president, we're going to have to swear in a special prosecutor along with her, because that person will need to get started right away. They'll have a big job to do. So, when you look at all of the things, all of the money trails, all of the evidence that was destroyed, and just everything that they've done, it's just really overwhelming. I'm astonished that Democrats don't have somebody better than, you know, sleazy Hillary to nominate for president. I think the riots in Baltimore give Martin O'Malley a great chance to be a little more on the national stage, since he was the former governor there. But who knows? I mean, if Hillary rides it all the way to the White House, it's going to be such a scummy time in America. You don't have to deal with all of their activities. It's just going to be so sleazy, and I'm sure there's much that we haven't learned yet that is going to leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah, and I actually think it would be much worse than even you just described it. I mean, we've sunk far enough under Obama. I think we'd actually be pretty much just done with another Democratic regime at this moment. But anyway, James S. Robbins, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your comments and commentary today, and we look forward to having you back next Tuesday as you join us every week, and we appreciate that.
Okay, see you then.
All right, take it easy. Well, moving right along, and again, thank you so much, James S. Robbins. And by the way, he's got a handful of wonderful books out, which are all over my bookcases, whether it is work that he's done on George Armstrong Custer or the Vietnam War, or just writing about the greatness of America, American exceptionalism, and things like that. You should really check him out. Go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of the great places and go order some of his work. And, of course, he's constantly writing various periodicals such as USA Today. So, again, go check out James S. Robbins, who joins us every Tuesday. So, I want to come back to Hillary because let's just talk about this server. First of all, if you or I, as a business owner, or anyone had, say, your state taxing authority or even the IRS looking into you for not paying your taxes. Not that you've even done anything terribly wrong, but maybe you didn't pay the proper amount of taxes and they start asking for documents and whatnot. And they say, well, we want to see your ledgers and your paperwork and maybe your computers that they find enough, they could subpoena your computers and whatnot. But in this case, she has servers put in. Bill claims he puts these servers in, and he says, legally you have no right to them. But that's actually not the case. The fact is, the second that the Clintons decided to use their own computers, their own servers, their own systems, their own emails for a single solitary piece of government business opened those arenas up for the eyes of the government. That's just the way it works. And quite frankly, in fairness with the type of system that we live under and the kind of government that we would all expect, a transparent, right, Mr. President, right, Mr. Obama, a transparent and open and honest and non-corrupt government, every single person who does any business whatsoever should be able to provide documentation, and if it's sensitive, then it could be done behind closed doors to people who could be trusted to look at it fairly and deal with it appropriately. But I'm talking about the president's, cell phone, his, that he didn't want to, share emails, the different people throughout this administration, not just Hillary Clinton, who've used private emails. I'm talking about, like the IRS or other agencies who all of a sudden, hard drives and documentation in thousands and thousands of pages just disappear. Oh, well, it's just so convenient, isn't it? Let's think about the convenience of this. We're being investigated, and it just so happens to be that all the investigations, all the computers, and all the information dealing with those particular areas, you can't get to them. They're all gone. They're all damaged. All the other computers within the government, they're all fine, and anything else you might want, which, by the way, we don't need, that's all available. So that's the biggest problem I have. And it's time for this. I'm so tired of – I'm a conservative. I don't know what the heck I am actually anymore. I mean, I'm definitely conservative, but I guess there's a little bit of libertarian. I'm just an American who's got some common sense, who's upset with the corruption, upset with the waste, upset by constantly being lied to by these people who profit by spending their entire careers working for us. I mean, have these people ever show me the legitimate jobs that many of these people have had, whether it be Chuck Schumer or Harry Reid or Pelosi, or I mean, maybe their husbands or wives or other people have. Maybe they temporarily worked in a law firm and have all kinds of issues there. Many of them have actually lost their law licenses. I mean, but how many of these people just have been on the dole, being paid for, and very well, and with great benefits, by the way, by us, and they're not accountable by us. They're not accountable to us. There's no accountability. They continue to get reelected. In fact, they move up. In fact, Hillary, you look at all the history behind the Clintons. They should be in jail. I'm just saying it. Forget it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They should both be in prison because they have helped enrich other nations. They have helped and have participated in a transfer of technologies and knowledge and resources from our country to other countries who, by the way, are in many ways our enemy. China is not our friend. They aim to overthrow the power that we have amassed over time. And by the way, for the most part, we've used our power toward benefiting the world, not as a detriment. Sure, we've made mistakes. Everyone has made mistakes. But no one has been more generous in the contributions to the world than this country, whether it be through charity, coming to the aid of other nations when they've had disasters occur, or coming to the aid of nations when there have been genocide and other things where forces have had to come in to help prevent further violence and destruction and whatnot. I mean, there's example after example after example of Americans rising up and doing the right thing and helping out. Now, of course, we've made mistakes with policy over time. We've been engaged in wars that you could argue one way or another we should or shouldn't have been involved in. That is the nature of humanity, and the geopolitics, and it's a lot more complicated than saying, well, we were just wrong. I could argue many reasons why we should have been in Iraq, and I could certainly argue many reasons, and I have, that we shouldn't have been, one being that, well, we're going to give rise, throwing off the balance in that region to Iran, and well, guess what? That's coming true. You go back to the tape of things I've been discussing for 5 and 6 years now, you'll hear me numerous times making that very statement, and in fact, you could, well, hey, the proof's in the pudding. Iran is now almost dominating that region because of the mistakes we made. Now, another argument could be made that in Iraq, we could have simply just handled things a little differently, and we could have prevented that. And so if you were going to go in, then we should have been a little more responsible. And I pass that blame not just on the end of the Bush administration entirely, and a lot of it to this administration, but for this country to failing to understand that regardless of whether you get tired of the wars, you still have to support handling these situations appropriately because they just come back to bite you or they regenerate themselves. In other words, let me give you an example. Jimmy Carter, his presidency basically ended because of 400 hostages taken in an airplane who were freed immediately upon Ronald Reagan taking office, correct? And you could make the argument now, as I see this cargo ship being taken, that it's almost like, on a much smaller scale, of course, but you know, repeat case of Iran flexing its muscles under an incredibly weak presidency, and you know what the response will be, I don't know, but they were willing to do it just as they were willing to do the same under Jimmy Carter. If Iran had known at the time, if Ronald Reagan were president and knew the type of president he was, there's no way they would have taken us hostages, because I'm pretty sure that Ronald Reagan would have just dealt with Iran, and maybe the world would just be a better place today. And quite frankly, when we look at the character and just the type of people who are going to be running for president in 2016, I'm looking for a multitude of things. I know I'm a little bit all over the map, but it really just all tied together. But let's just look at this. This president ran saying he was going to change things, that he was going to be more responsible to the people. Which people? Which countries' people? I'm not sure. I mean, we could make cases for several different countries around the globe. but he certainly hasn't been responsive or responsible to the American people. That being said, I want a president who's going to really do what he says and mean what he says, and the things that he intends to do are those that are, in fact, in the best interest of this nation and the people, especially the people who put him in office. Number two, economically speaking, we have left a lot on the table. This has been the worst recovery after a recession in modern economic history. We've left, believe it or not, over this six and a half year time period right now, we've left trillions on the table because the things that the actions taken by this administration to get out of this actually grew at such a pace that was much slower than should have been. And so when you have an economy, let's just use an example, if you're a $16 trillion economy and you grow at 2%, well, what's 2% times 16 trillion? That's a big number. If you had grown at 4, the difference between 4 and 2, it's significant. I mean, it could be $100 billion a year, it could be $200 billion a year, it could be even greater than that. But then the next year, when you grow another 2 or 3 or 4%, as opposed to 1 or 2%, it's compounding. So over a 6.5-year period, we have left a significant amount of money on the table. And it's forever compounding, unless for some miracle we have a year very soon where we have just an off-the-chart 8% growth and we call ourselves China. Although we all know that some of those numbers don't really add up or measure to legitimate numbers either. But the point I'm making is that we have taken on such a large amount of debt. We have left growth on the table. We haven't really created real jobs. We've created an environment where there's much more regulation, much more cost to doing business, much more cost to investing in our future, much more cost to families to survive. It's become very difficult in many places of this country for even two working adults in a family. I'm talking about a solid family, two working adults with decent or better than decent to good, better than average jobs. There are places in this country where you still can't make ends meet because the burden has become so great. The cost of everything, the cost of living, the cost of taxation, the cost of regulation, the cost of getting the services which you're almost forced to have at this point have become so great, and they drain so much out of what you bring home, what's left of the check that you bring home, that has become so difficult. And it wasn't the case that long ago. It was not the case back in the 40s and the 50s when this country just went off the charts with the growth and the progress that was made. So I'll come back full circle back to Baltimore and some of these other places and say this. If you really want to see gains made, if you really want to help even the poorest of the poor, if you want to provide an avenue for people who haven't had the opportunities, or maybe they haven't taken advantage, whatever the story, if you really want to see market improvement, then we have to make different choices. No longer should the Democratic Party have sole control over these cities, by the way, nor should the Republicans. We don't need forever control of one party over government on either side. We don't even need control over our lives by the government. I mean, I would make an argument that we need to start looking at the things that government should just get off our back and out of our business so we can make our own decisions, which are more efficient, because I'm telling you, and you'll understand, that I could make choices that are more sound for myself and will be more efficient in dealing with my own problems than someone sitting 1,000 miles or 500 miles or 3,000 miles away can make for me. And in this country, people sit quite a long distance. It's a big country. We have 315, 320 million people, whatever it is right now. And you just can't have a few hundred people sitting in offices making decisions for all of us. And they continue to just grab and grab and grab and pull in more and try to do that. And it's actually the reason, forget the whole, I mean, the 50 different reasons I could rattle off the top of my head of for why the healthcare bill was wrong. But the fact of just a handful of people trying to take over an entire system didn't make any sense to me. even you look at the military, even just having a handful of people involved in the military doesn't make sense to me. Because the reason you don't put generals in charge of everything of the military, and they don't just they don't get to decide we're going off to war, because they may be the military experts, but they're not exactly the policy experts or the political experts, and they're not the financial experts either, and they're also not the ones who are making the decisions representing the people who have to go and give up their arms and legs and their limbs and their bodies and their futures and their lives. You know what I mean? So that's the kind of system we are. But we've been changing that system. And I'll throw one more, topic into that, and that's the constitutionality of things. And by the way, the Supreme Court right now is looking at gay marriage. And, you can look at this both ways. And I'll make a couple comments, and I'm not even going to really say, what I believe on this anymore, because it's just, at this point, it's out of my hands. But the fact is, you could make arguments for both sides, and they could both be somewhat sound arguments. But the fact is that, a man and a woman come together, they produce children, and the human race continues to thrive and go on. Otherwise, we become extinct. So that's the argument for marriage, partially. It's the argument for why men and women are together. It's not exactly natural for any of the other combinations. But the fact remains, we have a large amount of people that we are all, could be members of our families, could be friends, neighbors, people we know, people that we know who know, who fall into these categories. And look, I know people who are gay, both ways, men, women, whatever, and they're good people, hardworking people, just like you and I. And they have families too. They have friends. They're neighbors. And to just cast them out as if there's something so wrong with them isn't exactly right either. And I'm not that I'm making the argument here that they should just be able to marry and do whatever they want. I'm just saying that you can't be so close-minded and bigoted when you look at these issues. But again, as some of the justices, I think it was Justice Alito and Kennedy, who made some statements regarding the fact that, this is really almost about a 10-year period that it's become even acceptable anywhere for gay marriage to exist, or even these combinations of marriages, whatever it be called. Yet we've had, centuries of history of just marriage being the union between a man and a woman. So how do you just throw away your entire history to make you're changing the definitions to make a few people happy? And in fact, the argument is that let's not change the whole definitions, but maybe we could meet somewhere along the way to, make everyone satisfied. And maybe it's just going to take a lot longer to make that kind of change, if that's in fact the kind of change that we're going to make as a federal government. And then, of course, many have argued that the state should decide. And I think that's really where I fall. I'm not 100% certain. I mean, I don't think there should be a federal law that says anyone can get married, because that's just an open recipe for disaster, to be honest with you. And I think there becomes too much control from the federal government involved in this. But if the state of California or New York or whatever decides that this is what they want to do, in fact, at some point they could decide the other way too. They could do something and take it away. But they should have that right. And if you don't like it, then you can move from California to a state, another state that maybe has different philosophy and different laws in the books, if that doesn't make you happy. But once the federal government does it, then we're stuck with it, and it's not going away. And apply that to any of these social issues, whether it be the legalization of marijuana, or, people cross our border making them citizens, whatever issue it is. There's so many that we have. And then I'll come back to the fact that many of these issues actually exist today because our so-called wonderful handful of picked leaders make them an issue. They politicize them to the point of dividing American against American, citizen against citizen, community against community, because they have something to be gained in it. But at the end of the day, we don't gain from it. It divides us. And the more we have real leadership that tries to unite Americans on issues and tries to deal with these issues differently and not so combative and not so in a divisive way, we will become a more unified people. And as I said, it will help us not only with some of our social issues, It'll help us with some of the issues within our communities. It'll help us economically. It'll help us to be more of a moral people, more transparent and less corrupt people. But it'll also make us stronger and more able to deal with some of these issues that we deal with globally with regards to national security and other types of issues. So why we're not doing this is beyond me. And again, I have a lot of blame to put out there. And that blame could be, you know, we could point to the past Democratic leadership. And by the way, I'm not thrilled with some of this Republican leadership anyway either. I'm not a big fan of John Boehner. I'm not a big fan of Mitch McConnell. I think that these guys are just politicians who are around too long, and they're always willing to make a deal. And it's not supposed to be about a deal. It's supposed to be about doing what is right and what is in the best interest. And they're not doing that. It's just, I don't know, it's crazy. And I got to give kudos, by the way, not just to James S. Robbins, who writes so many awesome historical and you know, policy type books or discussions on politics, but Peter Schweitzer, who has written so many books dealing with the corruption and whatnot. I've met him. I've met him at the Heritage Foundation numerous times and other places. I've had the opportunity to sit and listen to him discuss some of his books from time to time, and we've even interviewed him. And now he's got this new book talking about some of the major, major issues with Hillary Clinton. And this book needs to be picked up. It's a worthy investment, and it needs to be read. And the media, all of us, should be discussing the things that are contained within this book, and the Clinton should have to answer for these things. Because if you really want to run for president, then you have to answer till these questions until all Americans are satisfied. And in fact, the party, the Democratic Party, should be satisfied that indeed she's the right candidate. And I'll make the argument that I could point to certain Democratic presidents in our history that haven't been the worst presidents. Maybe not the best, but they haven't been the worst. I could point to Republicans who've made terrible presidents, and some have been fantastic presidents. But, you know, there's good and bad in both parties. But it seems to me that the Democratic Party has just completely made a left turn off the cliff. It's about time, and it's in the best interest of this country and the people that they generally represent to change course and to fix their problems. And I argue the same thing. It, you know, when Republicans get out of line, they do wrong, they should go to jail and prison and be held accountable just like anyone else should. But it's got to be both parties. And this country is better off having a good, legitimate, worthy candidate who's in the Democratic Party and the same in a Republican Party. And then we could choose from two good candidates that maybe the biggest differences are, yeah, you know, maybe there's one or two more social-type policies from the Democratic side that we're not happy about. Maybe there's a little more military spending and whatnot on the Republican. That's the way it used to be. Now it's just like, it seems like, I hate to say this, but the policy on the left has become the policy of just like ripping apart America. It's like, let's just spend and give away everything we have, regardless of what it does to our future. Let's just dismantle and destroy our military. Let's just ensure that China and other countries just gain so much ground that, you know, we in future incursions are going to lose many more people in wars that are not preventable. War is not preventable. I know you'd like to say so, but it really isn't. And it's certainly not preventable when you become weak. Because, as you know, the strong prey on the weak. It's in every example of everything we do around us. The fast cars go faster than the slow cars. The bigger, stronger, more capable athletes on the football field beat the other team that's not as capable. Every sport event that we watch, every wrestling event we watch, every boxing match, you name it. I mean, you go to a movie. Bad actors put out bad movies. Bad producers produce bad movies. Television, you know, guys that can't write and don't know what they're doing, they put up shows that you're not going to watch. It is almost like it is the survival of the fittest. And hopefully, when you have a society that has a lot of people who have to offer, then the rest of us benefit from it. And in the United States, that's the case. We're the kind of society where when you have somebody who's a genius who invents something that is either a cure to a disease or a new product that benefits us all, we all benefit. We all, rich, poor, middle class, have iPhones. We all have cable TV. I mean, when I say we all, I mean most of us do. We have Nike sneakers. I'm sorry, there are plenty of poor who have Nike sneakers. I've seen plenty of poor who drive around Mercedes and Lexuses and BMWs. I don't own one, but I see plenty of poor people in these communities that we're speaking about. You know, these cars are all over the place. I can make an argument that perhaps some of it is drug money, but it's not like this stuff doesn't exist in poor communities. In poor communities, as the Heritage Foundation study has shown, many people have computers, gaming systems, air conditioning, different types of appliances throughout the home, multiple cars, and things that didn't exist in poor homes in the decades and generations prior. We've come a long way. Maybe we have more things to, more gains to be made. We could always do better. But the argument is, you don't just tax people who've worked hard. You don't just break and destroy the middle class and take what they have to give to people who, in many cases, don't deserve it. We have to rethink this. But we need to rethink it as Americans, not as Democrats, not as Republicans. But we need to rethink these things and have open, honest debates as Americans. And we need to actually put people in place and as citizens who should be voting, decide once and for all that we are going to stand up against this. And I don't mean riot, but I mean stand up by voting and demanding and holding these people accountable that they start doing better. It's not going to change and happen overnight, but the more vocal we are and the more demanding we are, and when we actually do hold them accountable, in other words, your seven-term congressman who does just vote them out and replace him. And you keep doing that, and I guarantee you, they'll start to get the message. Stop contributing to organizations or candidates or whoever that aren't going to do what you're expecting them to do. Don't just keep giving money to Barack Obama and his foundation after he retires when he's already failed you. Why would people give? Why would you donate to build his library? Why would you donate to anything he's doing when I can assure you that he is simply going to do what the Clintons did? They've enriched themselves by giving away what belongs to the American citizens, and that's exactly what is going to and should happen to Hillary Clinton when they do the investigation, if they do. She should go away to prison because she's done wrong. There have been millions of dollars given by foreign governments and people to enrich their interest, not the United States' interest, and your Secretary of State, the former First Lady in the White House, and someone who wants to be your president has done wrong. And in my opinion, and this is my opinion and maybe others, but it's my opinion, there's no way on this earth that she should be allowed to run for president. She has disqualified herself, not just for some of these things, but for many others as well. She's disqualified for running as president. And the Democratic Party really needs to recognize that, address it, and come up with candidates that are more worthy. And until they do, in my eyes, they're a completely failed party. They failed their own constituencies. They've certainly turned their back on this nation. It's wrong. And I would expect them to change. Just as if my own party or people that I support were doing the same, I would expect the same of them. So again, we're coming to the end of the program. I want to thank again everyone for listening, and thank you everybody for in the chat room, and thank you James S. Robbins who comes in every Tuesday. Again, we'll be back. I know we haven't been doing a show every day, but most days we're on 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, so let's just leave it at that. We've got some great guests lined up for you in the coming shows and next week, so please do join us, and you can find me, Brett Rappaport, or the Final Say Radio Show on Twitter or on Facebook. We'll see you again tomorrow. Have a great afternoon, folks, and that's a wrap.
The Final Say Radio Show is an original broadcast of Rappaport Media. To hear more The Final Say podcast, go to www.thefinalsay.com.